passion, drive, and patience. What brings home the winning trophy is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. From superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED lights, and more, whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to turn your car into the MVP and bring home that win. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the long and winding Royal Road. My name is W.H. Park. This is episode 42, and as a special treat for everyone on this auspicious number, I don't know why 42 would be an auspicious number, but hey, you know, we have a first-time guest, long-time listener, first-time caller. It's their man, my pal, Neil Flanagan.
Hello, W. It's 42 episodes before I get to come on, which actually isn't that weird because All Japan in the 90s, not exactly my area of expertise. But I'm glad that we're talking about something today that kind of can tie into the present day as well. And I do have a theory about at least one man's significance of the number 42. It's the answer to the question of life, the universe, and everything. That's for the Douglas Adams fans, Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy fans out there. They built a computer which was called the Earth. No, I'm getting this all wrong and we're going way off track. They built a computer called Deep Thought that took tens of thousands of years to come up with the answer to the question of life, the universe, and everything. And the answer that it came up with was 42.
42? There you yes. go. You being a Douglas Adams fan, see, so I did not know this. I didn't, or you might have told me, I forgot. You tell me a lot of things that I forget, you know? What can I say? It happens.
Sounds right.
Sounds about right, right? And let me just try to fix my camera here. Like, is that, maybe that's worse. Let me try to move it over here. Oh, that's better. I think that's better.
And then where I went wrong, just to bore people even more, is that no one understood what 42 meant. So they had to build another computer to work out what actually is the question of life, the universe, and everything. And that computer was right. The Earth, but it got blown up just before it could come up with the question.
I've never had a desire to read any Douglas Adams, to be quite honest with you. You know,
not to go too far down this, because I can see the timer is clocking in 2 minutes. It was originally a radio program, then, I believe, a TV show from the BBC. This is way back. And then the novels came after that. But it's a very particular kind of humor. I think Terry Pratchett fans are kind of in the same bracket.
Yeah, usually people who buy Terry Pratchett books will buy Douglas Adams books. And maybe, who else? Maybe, I don't know, Larry Niven? Maybe I'm mixing them up. I don't know. Anyways, I'm more of a Frank Herbert guy, as people might well know.
I do, yeah.
And I don't know, Philip K. Dick, I like his work. As far as sci-fi goes. But anyways, yes, we're going down a rabbit hole here. But this is the long and winding railroad, AJPW, All Japan Pro Wrestling in the 90s. But you know, as we've been doing recently, actually, we're not actually going to be spending any time in the 90s on this episode. We're going to take a special look because it's not your forte, you know. But there was something All Japan related that you had watched, I had watched, and you said, I would love to talk about this and kind of review it and kind of analyze things that are talked about in this. And what would that be? What are we going to be talking about today?
We are going to be talking about a 2020 documentary on the All Japan Dojo. And it focuses, it's largely in the English language. It focuses on today's New Japan tag team star, Francesco Akira, who hails from Italy. He's 24 years old now, but he was 24 years ago, obviously, when this documentary was made, as he was a trainee in the All Japan Dojo. And this documentary focuses very much on him as kind of the main character. He speaks to camera in English, and everything else is subtitled in English. It was a very interesting watch and very accessible, I find.
Yeah, you would normally be able to find this on All Japan, AJPW.TV, but for some reason they've taken it down. But we found a link to a place that people can watch it. So, you know, for the interest of people being able to see it, I think it should be out there. Like, why All Japan took it down? I have no idea. Like,
no
put
idea.
Put it back up. I'd love to see you say, hey, go subscribe.
More interesting wrestling documentaries I've seen. Certainly recently, and I have, you know, unless he's now a New Japan talent, they don't want to focus because on him. I can't imagine that's the reason they it's not.
When this came out in 2020, we talked about it. I watched it and I was like, wow, this is great. And then a lot of people on social media were talking about it, but also like, you know, John Pollock was like, you know, messaged me. He's like, have you seen this? This thing's amazing. So interesting. And so we're going to talk about it. Like, one of the cool things about this documentary is like a lot of the things that they talk about are things that carry over from the 70s, from when Giant Baba, the founder of All Japan, started the dojo, and how things they learn here are actually unique to All Japan that you don't see other wrestling companies teach their younger wrestlers, whether it's in Japan itself or in other places across the world, like North America or Europe. And like, you know, when I learned a couple of things in here, I was like, oh, it's true. You know, how you hit the ropes, for example. We'll talk about that as we get into it. But as you said, and now is it Akira Francesco or is it Francesco Akira?
Francesco Akira, isn't it?
How do they call him in New Japan? I don't know. Like, I always thought of him, he's just appropriating the Japanese name. So he's Akira Francesco. Francesco is supposed to be his family name. Because obviously
I think Francesco is his given name.
Right.
And then, yes.
But I'm just saying for his gimmick, he's Akira Francesco when he was in All Japan, I think. I don't know.
Okay.
That's my thing. I've always referred to him as Akira Francesco. It's like someone having the name John James, you know, one of those people that has like a first name for both names, you know, like Dave Randy or something like that. There you go. Dave Randy. That's my wrestling gimmick name if I ever became a wrestler.
Sounds good to me.
I'm Dangerous Dave Randy.
Although it's slightly out of shot for those watching on video, and just before we started, I noted that WH's initials are on his are on his hoodie that he's wearing. There you go. For YouTube viewers, although reversed. And I was trying to figure out what it was. WH, enlighten our audience.
Oh, so I'm wearing the hoodie, and you can see the patch on the side. This is for the store. This is from the store of MCU Later guest, Andre Greenridge, who is the man responsible for getting Iman Vellani into comic books, and then she's Kamala Khan at the MCU. So he owns a store called Heroes World, along with my other friend who's the owner. The co-owner is John Ho. And they had this hoodie appeared in the first issue of Kamala Khan's new comic book, Ms. Marvel, written by Iman Vellani. And she put Andre in the comic, and he was wearing this hoodie, which didn't exist. And they said, we should just make the hoodie. And I said, oh, I'll buy one.
So yeah,
I bought
I'm one. In. Yeah.
There you go. So there
it's
you go.
Very
so
cool.
It's very comfortable. It's just as good as like a Chopped hyphen tees
.com.
You know, so, you know, hey, you know, like if Dickie wants to, hey, where do they get supplied? I'll let you know. I can ask for you, Dickie. So no problem.
Would you reverse those initials, WH?
I'm not that vain. I'm slightly vain. I'm not that vain. I already have, like, you know what? I have a custom zip hoodie that has PARK on it.
So, nice.
There you go. But we're gonna take a look at this documentary, And yeah, I mean, I if you're a wrestling fan, if you're a Japanese wrestling fan, you want to learn more about the culture of Japanese wrestling and Japanese culture in general, it's a great documentary to watch. If you want to know about like what it takes to be a wrestler, you should watch this. Like,
yeah,
you know, especially if you don't go to if you're from somewhere this doesn't have like maybe has traditionally had strong wrestling training that you can partake in, this is a great documentary to watch. But it is hosted and features Francesco. We'll just call him Francesco.
Yeah.
Yeah, young Francesco here. And what we start off with like basically him waking up in the morning.
Yeah, we've got this exterior shot of the dojo building with the All Japan truck outside. It doesn't look palatial. I don't want to put it down too much, but this is he wakes up in what can only be described as just a very basic kind of bunk area. I think he's separated from the rest of the world by a curtain, and this is how
he's sharing that room.
This man sleeps. Yeah.
Yeah, he's sharing that room with like maybe one or two other trainees. Because it's dojo system. It is something that carries over from, you know, the dojo system of other martial arts. If you're living in the school, you know, space is a premium. So you're going to be, it's also to build a rapport with other people that you're training with, especially if you're learning a skill where, you know, you have to trust them with your life, essentially in wrestling. Yeah. Hey, you're going to live here. It's the same in the New Japan dojo. Like traditionally is like a lot of these guys who are training in the dojo bunk together, and in any dojo really in most schools in Japan, like especially if you're training with a specific company, you do not have a very luxurious life. It is to teach you respect for the business.
Yeah.
A lot of veterans like, you gotta respect the business. Well, this is respecting the business. It's like you start at the bottom of the ladder, the bottom rung, even below the bottom rung, you know,
pretty much.
And so like, you know, but sharing accommodations and having the only privacy you can have is like a paper thin curtain.
Yeah. It's incredible. I don't know how many we're never really made completely clear how many trainees in total are in this building. We see about five at one time, I think, you know, when they're doing their drills. But it's a fairly basic way to live. I would say for someone traveling all the way from his, you know, family to a different culture, different language, all the rest of it. And we'll get into all of that, you know, as we go through the doc. But one thing, if I came away with anything, it was like huge respect for this kid who at 20 years old, I think he left Italy at 19. He's 20 when this is made. The commitment that's going into not just the training, but learning the language, learning the culture and all of that. It's incredible.
Yeah, it's funny. There's the parts where he's like showing you how he's learning Japanese and he has a kid's book.
Yeah.
And to be quite honest, I did the same thing. I would get a workbook for learning, you know, katakana and hiragana and kanji. You have to learn three different alphabets to be fluent in Japanese.
None of which have any resemblance whatsoever to English.
No, so it's like, no, not at all. And so he's doing that. And English isn't even his first language. He's from Italy. Mm-hmm. So Italian is his first language. So people who watch this and thinking you're going to hear someone speak perfect English, just be warned. English is a second language for him. Mm-hmm. And on top of that, he's learning Japanese too. I got a lot of respect for that. As someone who's always struggled with learning another language, I have a lot of respect for Francesco to do this. He's basically showing us his morning routine. He gets up, you know, from whatever privacy he may or not have in this room that he probably shares with like two other guys. Mm-hmm. You know, he's about to go training and he goes down to the dojo. So the dojo is connected to the housing and they start when they basically start with their warm-up drills because that's what they're going to practice wrestling first.
Yeah. We're told here, I think, on screen that training is Monday to Friday, every day, Monday to Friday, as long as there are no wrestling events. And I assume by that, it means these trainees would be working the show, as in putting up, you know, the basic stuff, constructing the ring, handing out tiles, being the young boys, basically, if
yeah.
there's an event. If there's no event, they do this training that we're about to get into every weekday, and it's absolutely brutal.
But it's so for most people who are training wrestling in Japan, like before you even make your debut, you know, basically it's boot camp. They're gonna shave your head probably. Mm-hmm. A lot of the trainings we see here are past that stage.
Yeah,
but some guys, I think, like Atsuki Aoyagi, I don't think he's made his debut at this point, or he's doing very, very, very few shows in the openers, and he hasn't had his character developed yet.
Yeah.
But he's in the dojo. But so they anyone who's in the dojo, basically they set up the ring, they bring in all the equipment, they help set up the ring, they help set up the merchandise table, they are the attendants to all the senior wrestlers, veteran yeah. wrestlers, including toweling their bodies off. Yes, they do that. They're cleaning mm-hmm. their laundry. Go, hey,
bags.
We want some potato chips. Who's going to the convenience store? Mm-hmm. Kira, you're fucking going. You and Dan Tamara over there. Mm-hmm. While you're there, get us some liquor too. Because you can buy alcohol at the convenience store. Yeah. And I'm liking it. I think we can do that here now. I forget. That's not something I do. So, but famously, I once saw Tama Tonga, now the Bloodline, mm-hmm. doing the convenience store run for his senpais when he was in Japan. When I was in Tokyo, I was like, hey, oh, he's convenience store young boy still, Tama Tonga. Now look at him.
Look at him now. Yes, WWE superstar.
That's right. Right hand man in the new Bloodline. There you go. But that's where he started off, everyone. All he people wanting to be mm-hmm. wrestlers listening to this. He started off as a young boy doing the convenience store run for his senpais. So keep that in mind. Mm-hmm. That's where you start. And look at the heights you can reach. But yeah, so there's a lot of that. And like just taking care of like duties that you know, the people who are veterans don't have to do these things anymore.
Yeah.
It's not their job to do it anymore.
As someone who isn't super fit and never really was, apart from, you know, had to do compulsory PE in certain sports in school, I think I'd rather be doing that than what they do here, if we're about to get into every Monday through Friday with these, I think it's a total of 2.5 to 3 hours of training. And that's just the morning session.
That's right.
And as you alluded to, I think they start with some just basic warm-ups, forward rolls, backward rolls, stretches, some of which look incredibly painful.
Yeah, so they have to learn how to do the yoga splits, mm-hmm. which involve like spreading your legs apart as you know, you're sitting down, you're spreading your legs as wide as possible, and then you have to be able to touch the ground, and if you can't, someone's gonna sit on your back to yes. help you reach that, and it's incredibly painful.
These guys are yelping in pain by the end of this. They're doing the horizontal splits and basically can't get all the way down. So one of the others is applying downward pressure.
Yeah.
It looks excruciating.
And the other thing, and that's to make them flexible, because you do have to be very flexible to be a wrestler for the most part. And then the other thing that they're working on is their neck exercises, and this mm-hmm. this is brutal. Like the back, so like at some point you're propped on your head and you have to do a front flip onto like into a like a backwards crab position,
yeah,
and then you have to flip back into like a dog, like I guess a doggy position, right?
Yeah, it looks insane, and they've only got this is all happening inside the wrestling ring. They've just got a folded up towel underneath their head. So the head is basically staying in the same place while, as WH says, they're flipping from the crab position into forward.
Forward dog position, yeah.
Yeah. And that's just one of several of these absolutely brutal looking neck exercises.
But he goes on to tell us, it's necessary for, like, he it's necessary for him to do it, because the neck is something that is like takes a lot of the impact in wrestling matches. Mm-hmm. Like a lot of the moves involve, especially in Japan, involve getting, you know, you're going to hit, you're going to get dropped on your neck. You're going to get dropped on your back. Yep. It all affects the neck. So, you know, neck and spinal like strengthening are crucial to wrestling training. And, you know, it's tough, but like I think he always has like, you know, Francesco always has like this very positive attitude in the sense of this is for me to get better. And he talks about the lack of like proper training that exists in Italy when he first started.
Yeah.
And then he talks about like he's discovered by Tajiri. Mm-hmm. He's working for All Japan as a freelancer, but that's his main base in about the 2018, 2019 period. And that's how he got his foot in the door with All Japan. Like, hey, this kid's pretty, I think something in this kid, I'm going to put in a good word for you. And they accepted him into the dojo. And so he's talking about like, that's nothing like this in Italy. There's no nothing like this kind of system yeah. here. But again, like, I think, you know, a lot of places in Europe don't have the kind of infrastructure for wrestling training like America does, Canada does, even now probably the UK does, versus, and Japan, obviously.
Yeah.
So for him, it's like he's always like very thankful, because it's like a kid from Italy, I'm learning in this proper system, and I'm going to learn from like great wrestlers. And I'm going to learn properly, like how to be a traditional professional wrestler in a very professional setting in this dojo. But yeah, I mean, a lot of the warm up is to strengthen key areas of their bodies.
Mm-hmm. And they're doing this every weekday, which is incredible to me. Some of the, there's other ones there. They're like an extended bridge onto the head, no arms.
Yeah.
And then moving sort of the head back and forward. And all I could think of is this has got to be terrible for, you know, the upper vertebrae. But WH, as you say, the number of bumps onto the neck that we've seen wrestlers take and you just make you gasp. This is obviously is, they think necessary, you know. Yeah. It feels to me like the inside part, the upper spine, could get damaged by just looking at this, but clearly more important to just build up the muscles and the flexibility there because of all of those bumps.
So we should talk about some of the other cast of characters that we see training with him. And one of them, I would say he's kind of like not a rookie anymore, and he's not in All Japan anymore, but that's Yusuke Okada. Okay. He's the guy, if you're watching this, if you watch the documentary, he's the guy who's basically shirtless throughout the entire training session. He's a guy that has debuted already, but he still, I don't think he lives in the dojo anymore. I would imagine he doesn't, but he still trains every day.
I think that's right. I think that he has this very short speaking part where, you know, he talks about the history of the importance of the history of some of those techniques that they're learning. But I believe he's already graduated from the dojo, and he does look visibly kind of a little older than the other guys.
So training with, you know, Francesco is Hokuto Omori, who's like now a veteran now, like not a veteran, but like he's being, you know, pushed much, much more now than he was 4 years ago. The other person is Dan Tamura, who's one half of the All Asia Tag Team Champions, and he has been All Japan Junior Heavyweight Champion. So he's not a rookie anymore. He's not a dojo boy anymore. So these are the guys that are training with Francesco. And you know, like you said before, Francesco's gone to New Japan. He's in the United Empire. He's teaming regularly with TJP, and he's been IWGP Tag Team Champ, Junior Tag Team Champion a couple of times. So he's made a very, you know, solid career for himself early on. One of the, you know, like, who else shows up when they're eating? Atsuki Aoyagi is there, and Francesco says, hey, you want to eat some of my nabe, my chanko that I made? We'll talk about chanko nabe in a second.
Yeah.
But the other person that we see a lot of is the trainer here, and that's Yuma Aoyagi, who is a former Triple Crown champion. He's multiple time world tag team champion with Kento Miyahara and a couple other guys. And he's like one of the top guys in the company, but he's I think he still might be the head trainer for All Japan as okay. well. So he's passing down the techniques that he learned from, I would say, Jun Akiyama, when Jun Akiyama was
okay.
was still in All Japan after he left Noah. He would have been one of the guys bringing back the techniques. And we'll talk a bit about, I think, what the history of, you know, the styles of learning in the All Japan Dojo were, because you have to think about before Akiyama, it was the Muto era of when he was president of the company. I do not think he was keeping those same techniques because that's not the way he learned.
Yeah.
He's from the New Japan system. So I would imagine a lot of the New Japan stuff is from his. And then when Akiyama came in and Muto leaves, Akiyama saying, well, we're going, because like this is the Noah technique. The Noah technique is the All Japan classic yeah. technique. So
I think even that splits exercise we were told was handed down from Riki Dozan as a sumo exercise, I believe.
So Riki Dozan is the guy who trained both Baba and Antonio Inoki, but you know, Antonio Inoki has like a lot of different other influences in his style of wrestling that he passes on to establish the New Japan Dojo. And Baba kind of keeps a lot of the things that he learned from Riki Dozan, who learned from, like, you know, American wrestlers coming to Japan to be wrestlers. And when he went to the United States to learn how to become a professional wrestler, and he was a sumo before. So
yeah,
you have all these techniques coming in there. Yeah, like you talk about the schedule, Monday to Friday, unless they're on tour or they're going to have a show, then they have to go help set up the show. That's the most important thing for them to do. But like they're training all the time.
Just to throw in there, you know, they're doing 500 sit-ups here every day. They're doing 10 sets of 50 sit-ups. They're doing 10 sets of 30 back extensions leaning over the ring apron, 10 sets of push-ups elevated with their feet on the second rope on this little wooden platform. This is all just before they start bumping, you know.
Yeah.
This is just
warm-up. You know, it's warm-up. It's, you know, strengthen their body. And they have that, the plank. This is how you do push-ups in Japan. It's like you don't do it on your palms, the palms of your hands. You hold this like this rectangular plank that you push down on, or you hold like kind of, you grip it.
Yeah.
You use that to push up and down. So it's a very unique, I've never seen this outside of like Japan or other parts of Asia. So it's very specific. So like, and they talk about, yeah, this is what we use. I guess from this point, we'll talk about some of the let me get into the wrestling training itself, which is, like you said, a lot of bumping. They just take flat back bumps for like, I don't know how long, maybe an hour of flat back.
Yeah, all
back
these bumping. Variations of just a back bump. And there's one where they kind of do a part one-handed handstand, sort of forward roll into a one-armed handstand and then onto the back. And we're told again that that's a giant Baba technique. So that's another one of these legends training techniques that's been handed down to them. Then they're doing freestanding back bumps. They're doing sort of some back somersaults onto their back, side bumps.
They're doing one where they just jump straight into the air and lands flat on their back. And I've been told, and like if you watch people talk about, you know, bumping inside of a ring, like the ring is not comfortable. Like when you first do it, it's like apparently just like an incredible shock to your system. Like you have to really develop like what they call calluses, wrestling calluses for this. If you like, I've heard people like talk about, I was injured for a year, came back. First thing they do is start bumping and like just to recalibrate their body to the shock of taking those bumps. Even though it's a springy ring, it's still painful. It is.
Yeah.
People say wrestling is fake. Listen, the pain is real.
We've all seen those angles when even in a WWE ring, when they rip up the mat, it's like a couple of inches of foam and then
wood.
I don't know, hardwood underneath.
Yeah.
So.
Yep. So, and I guess this is part where we talk about some of the techniques that are passed down. Like they talk about the arm drag. Mm. They do a lucha arm drag. In All Japan, this is something that Baba liked, so he made sure that the guys learned it. And it's—I don't necessarily think it's unique, to All Japan. I think a lot of companies throughout the world use that. I know it's like basically a lucha arm drag is a very deep arm drag, right? First time I ever seen an arm drag like that, it's Ricky Steamboat in the 80s in the WWF. So I don't know if he toured All Japan, but I'm sure he learned that. That's just something he picked up himself. So
yeah.
That's one of the things they talk about. I think for me though, and I know if this is the same for you, Neil, but the big takeaway I took was like how they hit the ropes.
Yes.
Okay. So in other wrestling companies, and I have checked this and I've seen, okay, this guy trained All Japan, this guy trained, or this woman trained in WWF, or most people hit the ropes when you get Irish whipped, you're going to hit the ropes for momentum. You hit it with as much of your back as possible to spread out the pain of hitting the ropes, because it's basically, it's either rope or it's cable or something equally as like uncomfortable.
Yeah.
In All Japan, the All Japan Giant Baba technique is to hit it with your side. This hurts more, but it allows for more spring and it launches them back into the ring faster. So that's the technique, that thing that Giant Baba wanted to set apart, was like, I wanted to look more powerful. The wrestling technique you see in my company versus other companies at the time, we're going to hit the sides. So I have checked this. Every person who has trained the All Japan Dojo from like this period, from like when Akiyama was there and before that, they hit the ropes with their sides. So the four pillars hit the ropes with their sides. A lot of the guys in Noah hit the ropes with their sides. People in New Japan hit the ropes with their backs. American wrestlers, most American wrestlers hit the ropes with their backs. I was watching some Stardom after I watched this documentary again. They all hit the ropes with their backs. So this is a very unique version. So like if you see someone who's wrestling another company, but they start off in All Japan, the All Japan Dojo, watch, see how they hit the ropes.
And this was one of my biggest memories of seeing this documentary the first time around, was the running the ropes thing, because I had never noticed it before. I'm not an All Japan expert, but I've seen matches and had not noticed. And then it's one of those things, once it's explained to you and you see it and the rationale for it, it's one of those little things you always notice afterwards, because particularly with the taller guys, putting their side into the rope as they run into it really stretches the top rope out further. So it looks, you know, even though I hadn't noticed it before, now I always do. It really does, even if it doesn't directly spring them back into the center of the ring, if it doesn't actually give that sort of momentum, it certainly gives the illusion of it. But I can only imagine the calluses you'd need to build up, particularly in the sort of underarm area, hitting that top rope so that it's stretching way, way out. It looks sore. And they tell you on this documentary that it's painful.
Just watch, if you're watching Modern All Japan, watch, like, for example, guys who come in from other companies. Like Kendo Miyahara was not trained in the All Japan system. Mm-hmm. He was trained by Kensuke Sasaki, right? So I do think he hits the ropes differently. Like, at least when he started, I'm pretty sure he does differently than Yuma Aoyagi. So if you watch a match with like, okay, there's at least one guy from the AJPW Kings Road Dojo system versus someone who comes from a strong style system, or like from Animal Hamaguchi's Dojo system or the Dragon Gate system, you're probably going to see two different techniques of hitting the ropes. It's really fascinating. If you watch Noah's actually a really interesting place to see, because like they have a very diverse roster, but the core of their training is All Japan, is Baba's All Japan. So like, for example, Naomichi Marufuji hits the ropes with his sides, but like someone who maybe came from a different company, like trained like somewhere else, will hit the ropes with their back. So it's really interesting to see it, like, and if they still do that in the Noah Dojo, I can't see why they wouldn't. I think these would be techniques passed down. But like, and let's talk about that, kind of the contrast that you would have within All Japan, the system, because of course Baba owned it up until his death, and then there's the exodus, and then Toshiaki Kawada becomes president of the company, and he, I would assume, like him and Masafuchi are basically running the dojo trying to rebuild their roster with younger talent. So these guys are all like doing the Baba system. So you know who the interesting guy to watch, I have to go maybe check it out, is Taichi in New Japan. Taichi is trained by Kawada. So he's trained in the All Japan system. So next time you see a Taichi match, see how he hits ropes. Is it by his side or does he hit it with his back? You know, he might have like, these guys who leave the company might be like adopting, oh, I'm gonna just going to do it differently. I'm not going to keep this. But if it's ingrained in you, he might still do it. I can't remember if he still does it or not. But he's a good example to see of like how he, if he still does it or if he doesn't anymore, at what point does he kind of switch over to doing a different from the All Japan position? So we have the Exodus, and then we have the joining of Keiji Muto into the company. So Keiji Muto becomes the owner and president of All Japan Pro Wrestling. He also, of course, takes over the dojo, and he brings in guys like Kaz Hayashi. Kaz Hayashi, I believe, is one of the trainers in the dojo, and Kaz Hayashi is a Michinoku Pro guy. So he's learning from the great Sasuke, who's like a lot of his influences is like from Mexican wrestling, from Lucha. So is he teaching the All Japan system? So if you watch guys like, you know, just before the Muto Exodus, the guys who trained with him, particularly Sanada is one of his guys. So see, watch how Sanada hits the ropes. Does he do it with his full back? Does he do it with his side? Manabu Soya is another guy. Kai is another guy who doesn't work in the company. But how do they hit the ropes? Those would be the three guys I would check. How does Suwama hit the ropes? Because he's a Muto guy. He debuted under the Muto reign. How do these guys do it, right? And so, like, Akiyama comes on board. You know, then there's a split with Muto and takes all these guys. And then Akiyama takes over the company. He's also taken over the dojo. This is where you get guys like Yuma Aoyagi, who is now the trainer. You get Naoya Nomura and a bunch of other guys. How do they hit the ropes? Well, they hit the ropes with their side. And because Yuma Aoyagi tells you, this is how we're taught. That's how I was taught. And I'm teaching it to the other guys. And this is the philosophy behind it. So as an exercise for people listening to this, go check people who trained in All Japan system under Baba, under Akiyama's rule, which is now like continuing to this day. That system versus the Muto era, and then check Pro Wrestling Noah. How do people hit the ropes? It's a fascinating exercise. Once I learned this, I was like, okay, I have to go check. And I was checking it like almost every match I would watch since my first time I watched this documentary. I was like, oh, fuck, I gotta go check this out. I gotta see how accurate this is. And I was like just astounded, Neil, about how much, oh, that guy's from All Japan. That guy's from New Japan. Okay.
It is. It's fascinating because it's one of those things same as you, hadn't really picked up on as a detail. But then when you see it here, it's you know, it becomes obvious after a while. I just wanted to also mention that the maturity of Yuma Aoyagi here, from my basic research, he's only 24 or 25 or something at the time when this documentary was made. And he's got just such great authority. And the way he explains what's happening to the audience and the rationale for why the training is the way it is. It's incredible that he's still in his, well, he's just hitting his mid-20s at this point, I think.
Yeah, he's close. He's just shy of 30 now, you know. It's amazing. I think he's like kind of alluded to being the head trainer. I think one of the actually trainers unofficially is Tajiri.
Yeah.
But Yuma's like is the full contracted wrestler. So they would officially want him to be kind of the trainer, I think. That's just my assumption there. But for the most part, he seems like he's running the dojo, right? And all the other guys listen to his advice because he's actually very, if you see him from his debut on, he's a very naturally gifted wrestler, and you can see, like, you know, how skilled he is in 2024, how great he is. So it's a natural that he is passing on this knowledge to the other guys. And he's like one of the few guys who came up during his time. Like Jake Lee is gone, now Yanamura is gone. So it's a good thing that he was the one who they made the trainer because he's still in the company. So But yeah, watch, for example, that's another good example. Watch Jake Lee. How does he hit the ropes? Because he would have been part of this system as well. Yeah, what was my train of thought going to be? I want to get back to Yusuke Okada. So the guy who's helping train, he's the guy who's shirtless. He's in DDT now. I lament that he left, Neil, because I don't think he's been used. When he left All Japan to go to DDT with Jun Akiyama, they were saying, oh, he's going to get pushed there. He has been pushed there. He should have stayed. He at least would have been junior champion at least twice, I feel, in this company. And he would have maybe gone higher. But he is great. He's just teaching these guys, like, okay, I'm wrestling. I'm getting pushed. I'm in Evolution with Suwama. I'm teaming with, like, veterans. I'm wrestling tons of people. I'm going to pass on one. I know you. There's a point where they're taking back bumps off a backflip. And Akira, and he notices something in Akira's technique. With Francesco Akira, instead of, like, he looks ahead instead of looking up when he gets backflipped by his opponent. And he's saying, you're overshooting it because you're thinking about going ahead instead of going up. And he said, watch me. And then he demonstrates, like, oh,
yeah,
he goes way higher and he hits where he wants to land. Because he's focusing on where he wants to go vertically, and that means, like, he knows where he's going to land, where he wants to go when he's coming down. Whereas Akira is, like, overshooting it because he's thinking, he's looking ahead. It's just really things like that, I think, so fascinating in wrestling. But this is, like, what a loss to their system to lose someone that smart and that caring, that he's coming in when he doesn't, maybe doesn't have to, but he just does because he wants to become better. He still wants to improve his technique. He comes into the dojo and he probably wants the free meal too. You
know? Yeah.
So,
but I agree. And it's stark how the difference is. You think these guys are doing a good job in their drills, and then Yusuke Okada, he's like, no, do it this way. And he's, like, way higher, way more convincing. Yeah, even the little selling drills they're doing, like, it's more convincing. You think, okay, that's why.
And he's doing it in broken English to a guy who's not, his first language is not English. But he's trying to help him because, like, he's like, I want you to succeed. So, oh, I've noticed this about your technique. Maybe do it this way. That might help you. And probably it obviously did, because, you know, Francesco Akira. I get confused now how to say it. Regardless, either way, he's the way he sells and the way he takes bumps, fantastic. This is the foundation, and you have to master the foundation. That's the point they make. You have to master the foundation of taking bumps, especially before you're allowed to debut. If, like, you could have, like, you could look like, I don't know, Randy Orton or something like that, but if you don't know how to bump to their satisfaction, to the trainer's satisfaction, they're not going to put you on TV.
Yeah.
Right.
They make that point a couple of times that, you know, it's, unless you can do these basic bumps, there's no chance. And the minimum is going to be 6 months. It's usually a year. It's usually closer to a year. I think we hear from Kento Miyahara later who makes that point.
But he's training under a different system, but it would apply throughout. That being said, Neil, listen, I've seen people debut in Japan with no business of, like, being inside a wrestling ring, just because, like, oh, we think this guy's
right,
this or this girl is money, so we're gonna. It's like, no, you should have kept them in the school a little bit longer till they mastered it. But that is neither here nor there. But, like,
well, that's a global phenomenon. Then maybe not so much in Japan, but yeah, we certainly see it in the West a lot.
Right. What point are we now in the documentary? We at the food yet, or what?
Not quite. They've done well. They finish off with doing 1,000 what they describe as Hindu squats, which is just freestanding squats. 1,000 of them.
This is typical. I remember, like, you know, someone like you know, Eddie Guerrero or Dean Malenko or Chris Benoit would talk about when they were training in Japan. Like, they would have to do this. This is something that they said, we do 1,000 Hindu squats, and it kills your legs.
Yeah,
but my God, you're going to have great looking calves and incredible, like, you know, hind leg strength. Like, so there's a point to doing 1,000 of them. I could probably maybe do 50, you know, maybe.
I've never tried
now,
any.
I don't know. But...
never tried any like real number.
But to do the full dip, right? To do like almost a 90-degree angle. Like not most people don't do that. Like you do.
No,
maybe...
and these guys aren't either. You know, no. At least not when they're getting to the 1,000 level. Certainly.
No.
I mean, and if that's not enough, right at the very end, they have to hold a sumo squat position right at the very end, which is where I'd probably put myself after 3.5 hours of this.
This is the long and winding railroad, Neil, not the long and winding TMI. Okay.
Sorry. Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, they do the sumo squat, a holdover again from Ricky Dozan's mm-hmm. time as a sumo wrestler. And I think it's just kind of that connection, right? That's more that connection to their roots, to the other worlds of martial arts in Japan.
Yeah.
Because, you know, like to them, it's a sport, right? It's not, mm-hmm. they don't say sports entertainment in Japan, even except for some of the more comedy based companies that I don't watch, because that's not what I watch Japanese wrestling for. But in all Japan, you know, they're like, we want to connect our training at the very least to its roots in like other martial arts. They don't, I'm not going to say real martial arts, like it's other martial arts in Japan. So include particularly sumo, which just has the most kind of like correlation to professional wrestling within the country and culture of Japan.
Sure.
And from here, we go take a shower.
That's right, to the shower room, which has this gigantic bath in it, which we're told was constructed for Baba. It looks like you could get about 5 people in it.
I mean. Like I never lived in a house in Japan. I always had an apartment, so my bathtub was normal. But they tend to be a bit bigger than Western bathtubs because people in Japan love taking baths. Mm-hmm. I took a bath occasionally. I'm more of a shower person because that's how I grew up as a shower person. And not to saying people don't take showers in Japan. Of course they do, but people love taking baths. It's a great way for them to relax. It's why hot springs are so popular in Japan, and like public bathing is so popular. It's like, hey, let's go get naked in front of other people, a bunch of strangers in an onsen. And I don't know if I've done it. First time it freaked me out. And then I did it subsequently. It's like, oh, okay. You know, just in there with a bunch of dudes, other dudes. And
parts of Europe, it's kind of Italy and Greece and so on. Turkey, it's also.
Hey, mind you, like the odd time I've had an entire onsen to myself at like a resort, and I was like, I'm going at like 11 p.m. Awesome. I had like every fucking bath to myself. And then the one time I was at this resort for work related thing, like a work retreat, I was the only guy in there. I was the only person in there. When I finished, that's when like 3 other guys came in. I'm like, perfect. Then I went to have some free ice cream.
Timing.
What a day. What a 2-hour period that was. Free ice cream after taking like getting, you know, like, you know, lava infused water cleansing your body.
Yeah.
Sounds like a treat, eh, Neil?
But this poor kid, and that sounds very demeaning to this guy because he's very disciplined. It's like he gets 10 minutes, I think he says, for a shower after 3.5 hours of training. And then he has to go and make dinner for everybody or lunch for everybody.
I'm going to say, my guess, that's the only shower in this house.
Yeah.
So he has to share it. And I would imagine they're not bathing together.
No,
they're you're like, okay, I'm gonna take my shower, get freshened up, go to laundry, throw my clothes in there, and now time to make dinner. It's his turn. So we're filming this the day it's his turn to cook. So all the trainees take turns cooking today on this documentary. It's his turn.
Yeah.
So. And they're going to make a very popular food in martial arts training, especially from the world of sumo, and that's chanko nabe. So basically what chanko nabe is, so nabe in of itself is like a broth or a soup, right? Huge in Japan and other parts of Asia. In Korea, it's jjigae. In Japan, it's called nabe. I'm a big fan of it. You know, chanko specifically is something that contains a lot of vegetables. And for the protein, like, you know, they use, can use pork, they can use chicken, they can use beef. The most popular, I feel, is probably pork. I think that's probably the most popular. But also, it can, so the nabe that Francesco's going to make is, you know, you start with water, of course, as your base, and then he's going to add miso, I think. No, wait, is it? No, soy.
Soy sauce.
So he's doing soy sauce-based nabe.
Yeah, he says that's the only one he knows how to make. He mentions, I think, oh my goodness, what were the other ones? Salty chanko?
Yeah, so salty would be shio. Shio means salt in Japanese. Shio nabe or miso nabe. I like soy. Shoyu is the word for soy. Soy sauce in Japanese. So shoyu ramen, or sorry, shoyu nabe. I'm a big fan of kimchi nabe. That's a huge thing. And miso nabe. Probably my favorite is shio nabe, and then kimchi nabe. And I like the works. I prefer beef and pork. Like, I would alternate the two if I go have nabe with friends or if I made it myself. But also the other big thing, because you want a lot of protein in your nabe, they use a lot of tofu. They just chop, like you see Kira chopping up all the vegetables, putting it in, celery, lettuce, carrots, onions, mushrooms, shiitake mushrooms, and ton of tofu. And they're all going to eat this with their rice to get the carbs, right? So it's very scientific, almost.
Yeah, there's a gigantic sack of rice. So he makes 10 scoops of that out of the sack, has to wash the rice, puts that into the cooker. And then, as you say, he's just chopping.
Yeah.
All these vegetables, some of them I didn't recognize, some of them.
That's bullshit. Say. He has to count it out like that. He probably could do it better now.
I would think so.
I just do it by sight. Like there's a line in the fucking pot, you know?
Yeah.
There you go. And then he washes. He does a piss poor job of washing that rice, by the way.
It's like one kind of very quick rinse of.
Uses his finger like he, you know, what? No. You know what I use? Like, a lot of people just like use their hands, but they like very, you know, you gotta swirl the rice in the water, get the sediment to come up, drain it out, and then do it again. I used a whisk. I thought, shit.
Oh, very good.
I bought a whisk at the dollar store, the 100 yen shop. I was like, this is amazing. You get more sediment coming out each time. So I would like wash my rice at least three times, maybe four times or five times before using my hand to you know, wash it. When I used a whisk, maybe twice or three times. The way I was satisfied, okay, this rice is clean now.
Yeah.
I'm going to put it in there.
Well, Francesco gives it one very quick rinse and just pours, you know, using his hand not to let the rice fall out of the pot, just pours the dirty water out. And that's his one washing of the rice before.
Bullshit.
Yeah.
No, that's no good. You gotta wash if you're doing that. There's still a lot of sediment in there. You know, you got to get that shit out of there. And no, I can do it by sight. Like, for me, I'm just cooking for myself for the most part. You know, my rice, I'm not cooking for like five other people. So it's like I bet you if you asked him to make some rice now, he could probably do it by sight.
I'm sure.
Just, you know.
Time seems to be the biggest hurdle here for this lunch, because I think he says it takes maybe 90 minutes or something to cook everything through. But it does look very easy. He's just very roughly chopping everything up and throwing it into a giant pot of water.
I mean, he's also cooking for everyone else, right?
Yeah.
So he's cooking for the other trainees. He's probably cooking for anyone visiting, probably Yusuke Okada's. Probably not eating with them, but he's probably partaking in the meal. He's got to cook for him.
We do see people in the kind of, for want of a better word, sort of communal area, living area, whatever, when they're eating that weren't in the training part of the documentary. So yeah, I think he's having to make for
Like Miyahara's probably coming. This is like famous, like Liger and Tanahashi in the New Japan Dojo would go there all the time to like, oh, let's get some free lunch. you know, Sho Tanaka's cooking today. Oh, he's a cook. Right. Let's go there. Okay. Oh, it's fucking Evil's turn to cook. Oh, we're not going his fucking time to cook because he's shit at it. I don't know that. I'm just guessing.
Well, you know, I think it's a fair guess because, like, one of the funniest parts of this in the kitchen, and it's not a big kitchen, is he's looking around and Dan Tamura is watching him. And he just laughs to himself. And I don't know if I can say this word or if it's offensive, but he says, you know, he's being watched because the little Gaijin's Chanko is only so-so, you know. So he's laughing to himself because yeah. Dan doesn't care that much for Francesco's attempts at this.
He's probably like, at least, well, I don't want to cook. So maybe yeah. he's just like happy he's not cooking and he doesn't have to chop and cook and clean afterwards.
He does say it's good, but to Akira, that's, he just laughs and says good for him just means so-so.
Yeah,
I can do better.
Yeah, he's probably better at it now. I bet he still makes it. I mean, you know, he's better at it.
I will say, for something that's so basic to make, it looks very nice. I wouldn't mind trying.
No, it's great. Well, next time you're in Toronto, Neil, we'll go get the Korean version of it. How about that? There's Japanese restaurants we can go to if you want the authentic experience. We can go.
Deal. Definitely.
All right. Maybe we'll invite some of the others to come along with us.
Hmm.
Maybe. We'll see.
I don't think I'll do the CN Tower run, WH. That's topical
running,
on the day we're recording this.
They're not running. They're walking up there.
Yeah. Okay.
We'll see. We'll find out who had the best time. I think last year it was Davey.
I think it was Davey again. I don't know if all the times are public, but there's certainly some stuff out there on Instagram
that
people can check out.
I haven't been on my social media today, so I'll get the lowdown later on when we're finished recording this. But the Nabe. So again, Nabe, cooking Nabe is probably every day. It's the easiest, but it's like the most nutritious thing that they can make to like, you know, get all the nutrients they need, get all the, like, whatever, the protein and everything. But also, like, you know, this is what sumos do to gain weight. And Akira talks about how he's gained, I don't know, like 10 kilos.
18 kilograms. Yeah.
10 to 20 kilos.
Which he mostly puts down to rice. I would say the weight training is in there as well, but my goodness, because he jokes about rice coming out of his ears and stuff. He'd never eaten so much rice before.
I mean, it's a staple, right? It's like eating, you in Asia, you eat rice almost 3 times a day. So, you know, I ate rice maybe, like, you know, growing up, like almost 3 times a day, at least twice I would eat rice for a meal. So it's a lot of carbs in that, but it's like maybe a bit better than eating pasta for your carbs, you know. So there's something to be said about the kind of the Japanese Asian diet for building your body to become you know, a combat athlete.
Certainly. I mean, it seems like this is obviously a very traditional meal, but they've obviously stumbled upon something, like you said, scientific, and in terms of basically there's a lot of carbs which will help them build. And plus they've expended a huge amount of energy that morning with 3.5 hours training, and there's a ton of protein as well for building up their bodies.
Yeah, and there's not that much sugar. If any, it's like maybe the most harmful thing might be the salt content.
I guess, yeah.
You know, so whereas, you know, versus like, you know, North American Western cooking, which uses so much salt and sugar to cook, there's not as much of it, if any, in Asian cooking, like, you know. So I've had people from Asia who I've met here who were living here. They're like, oh, it takes a lot to get used to the amount of this and that in Westernford versus where they are from. So I'm sure you know, Francesco's like, wow, there's so much rice, but maybe he's like, I'm gaining more weight versus eating maybe the same amount of calories and carbs in pasta, maybe.
Yeah.
So there is that. So then we move on to back to training, Neil. Back to training.
Yeah.
So the now afternoon. So morning is warm up, morning is wrestling training, and now the evening is weight training and basically to build their bodies.
Yeah, the documentary doesn't spend a huge amount of time on this, and I guess I'm kind of glad. It'd be far less interesting than the stuff that they do in the ring. But yeah, we just see them doing some basic sort of, pull down, weight training, deadlifts, those sorts of things. So 1.5 hours of weight training in the evening, again, every day. So they need all those calories. And in between, isn't that when we see young Francesco with his specs on, like I have, doing his studying? He's learning Japanese.
That's right.
He's got his notebook out, practicing his kanji characters. Shows this workbook, and it's kind of funny, but it's totally, totally understandable. It's aimed at, he jokes himself that it's aimed at like 3-year-old to 5-year-old kids, and he's 20. But this is a completely, you know, as we mentioned earlier, different alphabet. 3 different alphabets, isn't it?
Yeah.
In fact,
hiragana, katakana, and kanji, which is the most difficult. Like I maybe know 5 kanji by sight because like I see them every day. I know the one for train station, eki. Mm-hmm. I know the kanji for that. I know the kanji for fish. I know the kanji for work. Maybe a couple more. You know, like it is very difficult. Like I don't think I would ever have mastered learning kanji or getting like level 1 Japanese proficiency. Like, you know, hiragana is still like troublesome for me. Like I'm practicing every day on my app, but
yeah,
you know, and it's I see results from that, but you know, it's not easy. So like doing, but I never had the discipline to like sit down like Akira does and just practice writing it.
Yeah,
like that was the thing I disliked the most. Like I liked learning vocabulary, I liked trying to learn by reading, and then yeah, trying to write it, but like I hated practicing. My handwriting is just bad anyways, so trying to do it in a different language was like very excruciatingly frustrating. So yeah. I have a lot of respect for him, for anyone, like for example, like, you know, for Kenny Omega, he learned it. You know, like he's like people who can learn another language. You know, even our own Empress Karen Peterson,
of course,
she's very fluent in it. And if you hear the story of why she finally decided to buckle down when she was living in Japan to learn it, like I have a lot of respect for that. It's like I didn't have the same experiences she had because she was out in the countryside. I was living in usually certain urban settings and didn't need have the necessity she did. But she's incredibly fluent in Japanese, and that's because when you're actually working there, and you know, like in some cases, like okay, I gotta, and all his coworkers are Japanese. Right. There's very few people who are speaking his language, or either Italian or English to him. So it's kind of out of necessity for him to learn all this stuff. And then in between wrestling training, eating, and the weight training in the evening, he's gonna study. So
yeah.
I think all the other guys just relax, play video games. Maybe.
I would like to think so. Yeah, he's buckling down to his YouTube videos and his workbooks for at least an hour, I think he says, every day. Of that, and plus learning from his co-trainees and so on. So, you know, I wonder how proficient his Japanese is today. You know, I do follow him on Instagram, and he'll put up the odd kind of reel or video, but it sounds pretty good to me when he speaks in Japanese, but how on earth would I know? So let's hope that all of those hours went into...
I'm sure it did, because he's... I don't think he lives in Japan anymore, but he spends enough time there that I think it probably has osmosis itself into his consciousness. There you go. So, and then, yeah, weight training, and then finish up. They get ready for bed because he's exhausted. And then he's going to do it again on the next day until like the weekend happens. And then, you know, probably preparing for a show. probably doing a bit extra training if he wants. I think a lot of the guys in the dojo, like if they're really motivated, they do a little bit of extra training. Maybe not as intense as during the weekday, but they'll do some training. And then if they go on tour, they're still training, like doing warm-ups and stuff before the show starts if they set up the ring. So they're always training before their debuts, and it's the dream of the young boy in Japan or the young girl in Joshi wrestling to be able to like say, you know what, I'm not gonna train for 5 hours taking back bumps every day anymore. I'm calloused enough where I don't have to do that anymore. So with that, we'll wrap up our look at the This Is All Japan Dojo starring Francesco Akira, Akira Francesco, however you want to say his name. Yeah. And do you have any, I don't know, final thoughts about this, anything that was brought up in this documentary, Neil?
I guess so, just some interesting little cameos. We have Tsuji Ishikawa, some other sort of established wrestlers appear to talk about their training. He says he started with DDT and rented space with JWP, which I think I had to look this up, was Japanese Women Pro Wrestling, so a Joshi promotion, once or twice a week. So he's sort of saying, Akira, you know, coming over from Italy at 19 years old, it's not an easy thing. He's my son's age, but I have an awful lot of respect for him entering this lifestyle. Tajiri appears. He says he started his career without a place like this. So he went to Mexico and finally had a place to train when he returned and joined Hustle, I believe is the name of the promotion that he names. He says he's currently free, but he uses the All Japan Dojo frequently. And the last one, I think, was Kento Miyahara, who they speak to for just a moment. And he says he starts talking about starting training at the age of 18 at the Kensuke Dojo under Masa Saito.
Masa Saito, Kensuke Sasaki, and, of course, Akira Hokuto are...
Yes.
His influences are like, you know, they all had a hand in training him, but his main trainer was the late Masa Saito for sure, yeah.
Yeah, and he says like it takes at least 6 months to get the basics, and it took him a year before he would stand in the ring and call himself a pro wrestler. So just some of those little cameos in the documentary as well.
It's a very fascinating cameo. For this episode, I rewatched it. For the first time in a long time, maybe like in 2 years, I hadn't watched this. And it was like, okay, it's all coming back to me. But at the same time, it's like, this is really fun to relearn some of the things I forgot about from this documentary. And again, like if you have any, you know, like kind of desire to learn about the inner workings of professional wrestling in Japan, this is a great documentary to watch. If you are an aspiring wrestler, you want to see what it's like to be training in Japan, great documentary watch. But also if you just love what you see in the ring, if you love the style of current All Japan, if you like the style of 90s All Japan, they talk about a lot of the things that our favorite wrestlers now and then had to go through in their training. And it's fascinating. It's really interesting to look at All Japan, something that's kind of maybe continued from the Baba days, you know, maybe a bit of a hiccup during the Muto years, into the current 2024 landscape of, excuse me, of All Japan Pro Wrestling.
Yeah. All I would say is you might have to look carefully for this documentary. It's not like freely available on YouTube. And even if you're, as WH mentioned near the top, if you're a subscriber to the All Japan service, it doesn't seem to be there either, but you'll find it.
Yeah.
You'll have to find it.
It takes a bit of, you know, detective work, but you know, we, you know, like you can find it. Watch it first before you listen to this. That's all I'll have to say about that. But with that being said, we'll wrap things up here. But Neil, like with this being your first time on the LNWRR, but not your first time in Post Wrestling, of course, a steady contributor to the Post Universe at large. Where can people find your other works, Neil?
Yeah, they can find some written work on postwrestling.com. I tend to contribute more at the weekends than at other times. That's when I'm free from my my day job. The Wellness Policy once a month with Jordan Goodman and Wei Ting, where we talk about various topics. And I pop up from time to time on other shows like this one. So
there you go.
Yeah, there you go.
For me, of course, you can follow me at MCU later on the Post Wrestling Cafe, which I do. I'm going to be doing for pretty much every week up until I say the end of July, because we're going to be covering, we're currently covering X-Men 97, and we're having a blast talking about that show.
Tremendous. Yeah.
And once the cartoon is done, we're going to be looking at the X-Men movies and the Wolverine live action movies in preparation for the release of Deadpool Wolverine coming out at the end of July of this year. And we might have a special episode of MCU later for that, because possibly a lot of the people who do that show will be seeing it together in person in Toronto. So including maybe we'll have some guests, other guests that maybe we'll have a kind of a roundtable episode. We'll see. Who knows? We haven't thought that far ahead of it, but it's something that's percolating in my mind.
Interesting.
At least. So find me there. Of course, every month, beginning of every month, Post Perez with myself, the Empress, Karen Peterson, and coming up in the beginning of May, we'll probably talk a lot about the new Rossi Ogawa Joshi promotion, Marigold. That's just debuted upon, like, a lot of news coming out of New Japan, and
some controversy there already. I believe Kenny Omega was speaking I'll be careful and just say not glowing terms about Rossi Ogawa. So
we'll see. I mean, time will tell. I have no comment about it until, like, you know,
me either. My area of expertise either. So,
but yeah, we're talking New Japan, All Japan, Pro Wrestling Noah, Stardom, the whole world of Japanese professional wrestling every month, myself and Karen. And of course, every month, Long Winding Road. If you want to support the show, if you like what you hear, if you want to support this podcast, any other podcast, or any of the podcasts here at Post Wrestling, chopped-tees.com is where you can find all the merchandise from, like, all the post wrestling general stuff of like John Way, all like this hat, for example, and of course our friends over at Poison Rana,
that hat
that Neil's wearing. I have the same hat. To Long Winding Railroad merchandise, MCU Later merchandise, Post Perez merchandise. It's all there. Yeah. When's the Wellness Policy having their own merchandise?
It's more of a charitable concern, the Wellness Policy, if you know what I mean. You know, we sort of do it for the goodness of the audience, so I don't know that we would monetize it, but who knows? Maybe one day.
Yeah. Thankfully, I am a total mercenary, so I have no qualms about monetizing myself. In that sense. So, but also, like, you know, Nubian Wrestling Advocates, Rocky Maivia Picture Show.
The Youngest in Charge has his own.
Youngest in Charge. Our good friend Andrew Thompson has his own shirt now that you can go find. You know, our good friend John Cena, Shot in the Dark.
Eric M.M. Marcotte.
That's right. The What Up Doe, they got lots of merchandise. There's a lot. Yeah. It's a lot to navigate. And our good friend Richard Avian's got more to come out. So go check out chopped-tees.com. And if you want to support, there's a lot of, if you want some cool shit to wear.
Yeah.
It's a great place. There's some great designs up there. And more to come in the coming months. So with that being said, Neil, thank you so much for appearing on the Long Winding Railroad. We'll have you back on in the future, maybe.
I'd love to come back. Thanks very much,
If you can find the time in your busy schedule to finally show up on the show like you did today. Wellness Policy and ton of his written work over at postwrestling.com. I'm WH Park. For Neil, I'm going to say thanks to everyone who has been supporting the show with your comments, with the downloads, with picking up a t-shirt or a sweater or whatever. It's much appreciated. And until next time, I will say goodbye.